We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 107. Today, Scott and I are joined by Barstool JJ. What's up, man?
Chilling. Just hanging out in New York, holding down the fort for the offseason.
Scott, how's it going down in Virginia Beach?
Good, man. I'm getting pumped up now for Mr. Matt Holliday. I had to do some research to actually get a little bit excited about this dude, but now I'm pumped up. I'm ready to go with this kid. He's a monster.
Monster. Am I allowed to? Well, it's not a curse. I watched the GIF of him taking that line drive off the deck like 100 times yesterday.
I tweeted the same thing. I'll never forget where I was when I was watching that. That was one of the more crazy errors in playoff history, I got to imagine.
Yeah. And that's what I know him for now.
And that's not a good thing to be known for.
No.
You guys sick of all the happy holidays puns yet?
It's ridiculous. I don't even know how. And people are excited about them too. They feel very proud about them. They're actually going out there and saying something. They're bad. They're terrible.
Yeah, like it was the first time that had been tweeted.
Right.
I can't wait to see what like real news organizations or even like the Yankees social media team comes up with for like memes and GIFs. For like every time he hits a home run, it'll be like July with a Santa hat on.
Or what John Sterling has in store for us all.
Oh my God! Yeah,
he's already got interns writing out stuff for him.
Can't say Christmas, so happy holidays.
It's perfect. I love it. I thought it made sense for the Yankees to sign Holiday since they traded away one bald guy in McCann. They needed to bring in Holiday.
I love
protocol. You got to do the protocol. You got to make sure the bald dudes are in the building. You got to make sure there's old dudes in the building. They're checking boxes. The Yankees are doing their thing.
He was strictly signed to run kangaroo court in case CC falls off the wagon again.
Yeah, that's what I heard today. I was reading today that it's being sold as not only a DH for the Yankees, but he's a clubhouse guy.
Yeah, player coach type. These are the guys that they want to build around, these young dudes. Get some guys. I mean, the guy was a perennial all-star. He's a stud. A career 300 hitter. That's the kind of guy you want to learn from. It doesn't matter if he's slowly declining. The guy's still a 6'4 monster.
Well,
and he's gonna be putting some weight up in the bench. I can see him and Judge going head to head.
Well, that's assuming he actually is out there playing. He was pretty injured the last couple years.
Yeah, but now he can DH. So it's similar to like Beltran. You get him out of the field. Let him focus on just hitting, being a good clubhouse guy. I honestly see this as an amazing opportunity for Matt Holliday to win another World Series. It won't be with the Yankees, but when we trade him for prospects halfway through the year again, it's going to be amazing.
So you've got him having a good first half of the season, though.
Yeah, I think any guy who goes out and at this stage in his career is a career 300 hitter, has hit almost 300 home runs, driven in over 1,000 RBIs. When you take half the game away from him and let him just focus on hitting, it's what we saw in Beltran last year. I think it's what we saw in A-Rod 2 years ago, but, 5 years younger.
Well, he's not young. He's 37 years old. So
he's still 36. It'll be 37. So us 36-year-olds are spry still. There's nothing wrong with 36.
That's right.
36 is a great age. So the fact is, look, the dude was coming back from I think he got hit in the hand, right? He had a broken thumb or something in his hand. That's one of those weird injuries that it's got to be some kind of an adjustment coming back. And when he did come back, I mean, he was back for like, what, 3 games? It was only a few games. He did hit a home run. Dude is like JJ was saying, he's a 300 hitter. I mean, that's what he's shown over, his entire career. So I'm excited for this guy. And the fact that he hits Oppo and spreads the ball all around and does not strike out a lot, this is a beautiful match for Yankee Stadium and this lineup.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to sit here. I mean, you said you're excited about Holiday. I don't know if I can go that far. But at the same time, given the choice between Holiday and 1 year, $13 million, and signing Encarnacion for like $90 or $100 million and being stuck with that contract when he's 39 years old and sucking the life out of a team, I guess I'll take this.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I think really – and what works out is Holiday, like they say, you know, he's a clubhouse guy. He's a veteran. There's also no way that he signed this agreement thinking it's anything more than, hey, come in, we'll give you $13 million, which is a ton of money. You get to wear pinstripes. Who knows? Maybe these young guys get hot and we make a run at this. Or you're going to get traded to a contender and get a chance to win the same way we had, you know, the closers in the World Series last year. Beltran was put in a great position to go out there and win again. And, you know, the Yankees have a million prospects. They're not all going to pan out. But if we could get one or two more by moving a guy like Holiday in the event that we're not, you know, a winning team, then that's just more that we have in our arsenal to trade in the coming years as we build this superpower coming out after the 2018 season.
No, this is a great sales pitch. This is a great sales pitch because Brian Cashman now is touting the quality of team that he trades his big boys to and now is selling veterans on the quality of team that they will be traded to halfway through the season. It's beautiful. It's a genius move by Cashman.
It's certainly a low risk, high reward situation. If Holiday sucks, then they can just move on from him after a year. And like you guys have been saying, if he does produce, you either get his production for the whole season and make a playoff push, which would be ideal, or you trade him midseason. I remember when Frank Thomas went to the Oakland A's and everyone thought he was done because he was injured in Chicago and he had like a renaissance couple years for them. So if you're Matt Holiday, you're thinking, I could stick around the AL DH and make like $40 more million into my late 30s, early 40s. So he does have a lot to play for, even though you might not think so.
The lifetime of a player is definitely extended. I mean, look what Kadir was doing in New York. I mean, he got a nice little payday, was having a decent year. But when he actually signed that deal after Colorado, how old was he? 35, 36 years old. I mean, he was definitely pushing the age and got another contract. So, you know, maybe Holiday is playing for another 2 year contract, possibly if he could sign some big numbers. You never know.
I just see some Yankee fans on Twitter legitimately excited for this. And Scott, I know you said you were excited, but are you really? I mean, you can only get so many expectations for this kind of thing.
You just got to look at the situation. That's the biggest thing. When you look at the situation and what happened and what we needed and then what Cashman went out to get while still staying on this path towards youth, and then that's exactly what he did. He got a guy who has something to prove, who is going to be only at the DH spot. Like JJ was saying, you're cutting half of it out. I mean, there's a much bigger chance now that he can stay healthy. I look at a hit by pitch as a fluke injury. He was dealing with two hamstrings the year before that, but I mean, his track record, he plays games. He's a career 300 guy. So yeah, I like the move. I think it could be a good spike for 1 year.
If you also think about it too, just from like a number standpoint, last year we paid A-Rod $27 million to hit, what, 9 home runs. We had Beltran and McCann take some at-bats at the DH spot. We've now cleared out Beltran's salary totally. We've cleared out most of McCann's and brought in someone who's not going to have any kind of controversy. The media, we can't do anything to stir up any controversy between Holiday and Gary Sanchez. Because we were 0-15 Gary Sanchez slump and a 2-home run game from McCann away from, well, maybe Sanchez isn't ready. But now, for less money and with getting some prospects from Houston, we have a guy who can put up the same or better numbers than we did before. And we can trade him again for more prospects.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point you bring up, and it's related to one of the mailbag questions from @JayCollier on Twitter we got. He said, would you rather have kept McCann instead of signing Holiday? And I think to your point, JJ, you were kind of saying that as far as production goes, if you look at the numbers, McCann and Holiday, there's not really much difference. Yes, one guy hits from the right side, one guy hits from the left side, depending on what you prefer for your lineup. That can make a difference. But McCann, you think maybe he there would be some controversy with catcher. And I know Scott and I have talked about this in the past. Maybe McCann requested to be traded because he saw he was only going to be a DH backup first baseman, and he has a vesting option in his contract where he makes another $15 million bucks in 2018 if he catches 90 games. So I think there might have been some behind-the-scenes stuff going on with McCann maybe requesting a trade.
If I've learned anything from watching the TV show Pitch on Fox, it's that they go to the veteran catcher and give him the option to waive his no-trade clause. That's probably exactly what happened. They, you know, probably went to him. He, you know, his agent hears it, and they probably positioned it exactly the way you said, but so he comes like it's his idea. Like, you know, maybe it wouldn't be that bad so that he can go get his 90 games catching.
I don't think McCann actually stirred away from that. When he went on, I think he was on WFAN talking to Francesa. He was talking about that. He wasn't ready to give up the catching position. So, you know, that is the kind of the undertone of, yeah, I'm not ready to give up the catching position, and no, I'm not ready to give up the possibility to get that option.
I think if you also compare Holiday to McCann, now don't get me wrong, McCann, you know, has been a pretty good player throughout his career. But with Gary Sanchez coming up, and he will need some guidance. Joe Girardi was a major league catcher for years. He can provide that guidance for him. When we look at guys like Aaron Judge, eventually Clint Frazier, we might have Tyler Austin in the outfield some. Having the outfield leadership that someone like Holiday can give is going to be big, because Gardner's been a great Yankee, but a great baseball player. He's a one-time All-Star. Ellsbury got a huge contract on steroids, you know, has an inability to stay healthy. Doesn't really seem like a guy who's going to take that veteran leadership, let me coach you through your first year up here, that he can provide to someone like, you know, to guys like Clint, Judge, and Austin, you know, helping them adjust to the major league level, playing major league outfield, and, you know, preparing for games the right way.
Well, what happens if they trade Gardner? I'm a little worried that maybe this is in the back of Cashin's mind, a contingency plan for if they do in fact trade Gardner.
Oh, see, that's the one thing that gets me worried. Yeah, that's the one thing that gets me worried. Not so much that they would trade Gardner, but that Holiday would be a contingency plan for left field.
Right.
That's the only thing that worries me, is that Cashman has that in the back of his mind. But I mean, knowing what Holiday did last year, the year before that, with the injuries, the hamstring injuries as well, the fact that he is a below average outfielder, it's the writing's on the wall that this guy needs the DH spot to be productive at this point in his career. And so even if they do trade Gardner, I don't think that's it's going to be a Holiday job. I think you're going to look at more of the, you know, going younger with some of the guys in the system.
Yeah, I think Clint Frazier is a hot streak away from coming up. He'll be up May or June, latest July, because, you know, that's what they told him when they traded for him. I know you guys had him on. He needs to, you know, get a few more games under his belt at AAA, but most of the really good impact players don't spend a ton of time at AAA. They kind of, stop in there for a little bit. And I think that's going to be the situation with Clint. And, you know, the job will be his soon. So I really wouldn't be surprised if they move Gardner.
I said that last offseason, too. And it just seemed like it was always so close to happening. There was always so many rumors, and it never actually happened. I agree with you that at this point, it seems like they are set on moving Gardner, especially because when we did talk to Frazier, he said they moved him to left field full time. I know he's playing a lot of center field with Cleveland, but now he's left fielder full time. So, wow, you actually think as soon as, like, late spring, he could be in the majors? That's faster than I thought, but I guess if they do trade Gardner, that is a good plan to have, unless, of course, he really, really struggles, but you'd hope that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding from some really reliable sources. And at the same time, if they can give him the at-bats, provided he doesn't come up and, you know, hit $150, you know, you let him sort it out in, you know, at the major league level every day. There's nothing more he's going to learn in Scranton than he will in the Bronx if we're not really, you know, contending for a World Series this year.
Yeah. And I guess even though Holiday can't catch like McCann could, he can still play first base, at least to the level that McCann could. I know I was following some tweets right before we got on. I guess Cashman was speaking to the media, and he said he's going to let their plan is to let Tyler Austin and Greg Bird fight it out at first base. But I guess Holiday's there as a backup to the backup first baseman.
Well, I think there's flexibility, which is nice. I mean, he's not a superior defender by any means at any position. So the fact that he can play multiple positions gives Girardi more flexibility, because Austin's the same guy in the sense that he can play multiple positions. He's younger, he's faster, he's probably better with a glove at this point. But he is also a flexible option for Girardi. I mean, you know that Bird's going to be, unless he just completely bottoms out in spring training, he's going to be the practically everyday first baseman. So I think that it will be to give him rest. But I think Austin, you're going to see as almost a super utility guy.
All right, I want to move on to I tweeted out a Twitter poll from at Yankees Podcast. It's our show Twitter account. If you don't follow it, definitely follow at Yankees Podcast. And I asked, if you could only make one move, would you sign a starter, reliever, or offense? And surprisingly, 66% answered starter. And I think that probably speaks to how big of a question mark the rotation is. But today, Rich Hill re-signed with the Dodgers, 3 years, $48 million, which might have been too rich for Cashman's blood. Not sure. I know the Yankees were a leading candidate for him. But, JJ, are you surprised considering the quality of starters on the open market versus the quality of relievers and hitters on the open market that 66% would most want to sign a starter?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, starting pitching. So, you know, to kind of just for a second, when we're talking about the first baseman, it's bad that as a Yankee fan, because we've had Teixeira for so long, I'm conditioned to like, well, we need three backups because there's going to be injuries. And I think that's where our rotation is now. You know, at some point, CeCe's going to have something and miss, you know, a handful of starts, whether it's, you know, he goes on the 10-day.
Shockingly made 30 starts last year, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much, you know, and he was good. He was the best number five starter in the league. And that's what we need from him right now.
The only
now.
Problem was he was their number three, but he was pitching like a number five.
He's the best number five starter in the league. That's put it on a T-shirt. And he, when you look at Tanaka, at some point, he's going to need to skip a start, get stretched out to like his, you know, Asian month between starts. And then we've got a lot of question marks. So getting another starter in there would be nice. I did not want to see us commit 3 years and that kind of money to Rich Hill, though.
I know. That would have been – it would have been so painful watching that guy go on the DL every July and August with a blister. It just – it would have been like Mark Teixeira all over again, having dizziness spells or being dehydrated or whatever it was he was always suffering from.
I honestly think if he didn't die, we were going to trade for Jose Fernandez this offseason. We were going to package up a bunch of prospects.
Well, I wouldn't have minded that. The guy was talented.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was on our radar anyway. And I think that that's something we definitely would have looked at. And I know it's bad to say, but when I turned on SportsCenter that morning, I saw he died. My first reaction was, oh, so we're not going to trade for him.
I think that was the most Yankee fans' reaction.
Yeah.
Oh God. The fact that we would we're considering giving up like the entire farm system for a starting pitcher, because they're talking about Sale in the same way. And I have such a hard time dealing this many prospects and all the things that we've been building towards for one guy that's, you know, an arm injury away from a completely different pitcher. Because it seems like now it's happening over and over and over again with these guys. So I like the fact that they're not going to be going up. Like Rich Hill, give me a break with these blisters. It's ridiculous. I think he's been on every major league team, every major league roster in his career. The fact that he got that much money at this stage of his career is unbelievable. So I'm glad they stay away from him. And I do think I've talked about this in the past
Caprellian.
Caprellian, every time I say it differently, Caprellian will be up sooner than later. If he stays healthy, he's going to be up, I'd say, by June, July.
I don't want, you know, Rich Hill and Encarnacion, I don't want us committing big money to 3 and 4 year deals. I'm totally content with us making a run at the wild card, maybe the division over the next 2 years if young guys get hot, and then 1,000% winning the 2019 World Series because we have flexibility in our payroll to go out and get some of the free agents that are available. We'll have flexibility within our system to make trades for marquee players, and we're just putting together the final pieces rather than, you know, similar to our offseason after 2008. I want us to be able to do that without AJ Burnett and to, you know, give up five guys to go out and get a Chris Sale right now when he's going to be pitching for a team that is contending for the wild card. I don't really want. I want either if Chris Sale's still the same or, you know, whoever the next Chris Sale is in 2018 when they are still hot.
They can do that next offseason. If the team develops and some of the prospects develop, they can then take because they have such great depth in the system that they can take guys next offseason and trade for – it might still be Chris Sale, who knows, or Archer or one of those guys. I don't think they need to make that move right now. I just think a lot of fans are terrified going into next offseason with basically 4 question marks out of 5 in the rotation.
Yeah.
I mean, we could worry about next offseason then, but like you're saying, we're not setting ourselves up for 2017. We're setting ourselves up for 2019 when everybody's available, when you can really, you know, show the foundation of your team to free agents and then go out and build a dynasty. I mean, that's the year that we're going to be starting this thing as far as the production. So now is all groundwork, I think, for that for 2019.
And Beltran signed with the Astros 1 year, $16 million, which was about what was expected for him. I'm honestly pretty shocked the Astros added more payroll after they added McCann. I did not expect them to go out and sign another bat, especially considering their lineup I thought was pretty good, even without Beltran. Do you think, though, Holiday is just it seems like Holiday is a lesser version of Beltran at this point for a slightly cheaper. Would you have preferred, either of you guys have preferred Beltran over Holiday?
I did not want, I didn't want Beltran back. Even though Beltran played well for us, he's older, for, you know, the money that he got, I don't really see the value. There's a lot of, it's just a reminder of A-Rod when he was on the team. It's let's just walk away from guys who aren't with the team anymore. If you're part of the overpaid, underperforming years of the Yankees, I don't need to bring you back until an old-timer's day.
Yeah, you just wanted to see someone new in the lineup.
Some change, yeah, a little bit of change. There's
and
nothing.
Everyone gets to be a Yankee once. Jose Canseco has a World Series ring with the Yankees. It was Matt Holliday's time.
There you go. Even Pudge Rodriguez was a Yankee.
Yeah.
Cespedes goes back to the Mets. How close do you think the Yankees were to actually signing Cespedes?
Not close at all.
Yeah, I think pretty far.
I think the fact that there's all these reports of Cashman seriously negotiating and talking at length with his agent is, you know, I'm sure there were conversations that happened because that's what Cashman does. I mean, Cashman goes around and finds out what the price is and likes to drive it up. I think he likes to play his little Cashman games and they work very well. And I think that's what it was. I don't think there was ever any intent on signing him.
Yeah, Cespedes belongs with the Mets for whatever reason. It just fits. He enjoys being a New York Met, sort of the way Darrell Rivas enjoys being a New York Jet.
Stop it.
But yeah, I think if they went really for it, just didn't make sense for right now. Let's say he had an opt out in 2 years, or he came up in 2 years, or even next year. Then maybe, but it didn't make sense. And when you see all the stuff of, oh, he's playing golf before games, but now he's tired and he's got to sit out. Like, that is what the Yankees are trying to get away from. Oh, that's yeah. The off-field distractions that they're going to have enough of that with Clint Frazier running around New York City at night.
You're right. No, that kid is an animal. He is going to be tearing it up. But you're right. The fact that he does make these news stories about playing golf and then you coming up lame and not being able to do all the things he needs to do on the field. It's just not a good setup. It's fine. Leave him in Queens. He can hide out there. Not a good spot in the Bronx.
JJ, when we had Frazier on our podcast, the first thing he told us was that he just bought a house with a couple buddies at the University of Georgia. And Scott and I both immediately had the same thought, like, oh God, please don't do something stupid.
Oh, I'll, when we're not recording, I'll tell you some stories.
Excellent. as far as signings today that directly also affects the Yankees, Melanson going to the Giants, 4 years, $62 million, which is basically a guarantee now that Chapman is going to be in the neighborhood of $100 million. I'm assuming the Yankees are still in talks with him, but this Melanson contract kind of got me scared, Scott, because now Chapman's talking about 6 years, and to commit that much to Chapman is, I think, stupid.
If you read the whole thing about what Chapman was saying today too, it's pretty funny because he's like, I never asked for $100 million. It's someone who is as good as I am should never have to demand, you know, X amount of money or X amount of years. It should just come to you. So he's such a cocky son of a bitch with that statement and what he's asking for. So, you know, damn well, his agent has set a bar at $100 million. And, you know, if it is staying there, and someone overpays for him, it's not going to be the Yankees, because I think Cashman's smarter than that, and he realizes that it's just too much damn money, especially if we're talking 6 years and $100 million plus.
Well,
yeah, if it comes in like that, like don't sign him. Convert Severino to a closer.
Yeah, I think they should do that anyway.
Ninth inning, love Betances. Don't trade him. Keep him in the eighth. Keep him in the seventh. Do not put him in the ninth. Can't have it. He's not good at it.
You really think so? You really think he can't handle the ninth?
I think he's shown us several times that he's not.
It was really September of last year when he was completely burned out. I mean, that game in Fenway sticks out to me as the biggest meltdown of all meltdowns. But if you look at what he was doing leading up to that, he was pitching so often. And the way Girardi warms these guys up, it's like they're pitching a whole outing in the bullpen every other day before they even actually get onto the actual mound.
Yeah, Baseball Reference is going to have to add a category of warm-up pitches.
Yeah. And I agree that I think there is some slight concerns with Betances in the ninth, but if he's their closer next year, I still think he's would be one of the better closers in the league.
If he ends up being the closer, like I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I'd prefer we brought someone else in as a closer. I don't have his splits by inning, but he is. I feel like he's much better in the seventh or eighth than he is in the ninth.
Given the choice between Betances or Chapman for 6 years, $100 million.
See, I don't think, similar to what Scott said, I don't think we're going to get to that. I think people throw out these numbers and it's, you know, 6 years, $100 million, Bryce Harper, 10 years, $500 million. Yeah. And those are just Yankee numbers. Someone throws out a number and says, will the Yankees pay this? If the Yankees say no, that number continues to drop. And for someone like Chapman, and it'll happen the same thing with Harper, is the agents know, you know, whether it's they go, all right, 100, 6 years, no, 99, no, 98. And they just go, the Yankees, if everyone will come in at 85, then the Yankees will be, all right, we'll go to 90. Then, all right, you get them. I think it's a game that Cashman plays when he is buying to say, all right, no, we're not going to do that. And no one else is going to jump above the Yankees. For anyone else, no one else has the money to make that move or the need to.
Dodgers.
I don't see them making that move. They've got so much money committed already.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they give a crap.
I don't know. The new CBA will be interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to open the door and close the door for a lot of different teams is this new CBA and how willing the owners are to part with this, you know, with the tax money. I mean, it's a big deal. And I think it's when you're talking about the bigger name free agent guys, it's directly going to affect them. And I think another team that would possibly pony up that money are the Nationals. I mean, he's one of the their owners are one of the richest guys in the world. They have more money than God. I mean, they can spend it if they want to. It's just a matter of he wants to play that game and spend that extra money. So,
yeah. All those teams are not in the AL East, so I'm comfortable. And just to go back to Betances, I looked it up. His ERA in the seventh inning, sixth inning is 1.10. By the in the sixth, oh no, in seventh innings, 1.97. Eighth, 1.65, ninth, 4-2-9.
Yeah, there's a sample size issue going on there, but
yeah.
But I get what you're saying.
50 innings in the ninth inning, 59 in the seventh, 120 in the eighth. He spent most of his career there.
Yeah.
You know, I just think it's something he could probably overcome. But if
see, that's the thing. I think he needs more time there as well. I'm not saying that he's not better in the eighth, because I actually do think he's better in the eighth. But I don't think he's a guy that can't pitch the ninth and become extremely effective in the ninth. I mean, the guy has got, you know, all world stuff, as good a stuff as anybody in the bigs. I think it's between the ears at this point and getting comfortable with that ninth and making sure that, you know, he knows the guy. And I think the overwork is an issue. I think he does tend to get tired at the end of the season. So that's something that Girardi is actually going to have to do more than Betances, because I think he does. And when he gets tired, I think his mentality changes.
Where you guys mentioned the new CBA. Thankfully, there will not be a lockout. It would have been classic MLB to have a lockout and ruin any momentum that they gain from the Cubs winning the World Series. But there's a 5-year deal. And
here's what I thought was going to happen. I thought that Cespedes was going to agree to a new contract, but like the Mets wouldn't sign, like send it into the office, or they'd schedule the signing for after. Then we'd have like a week long lockout, and Cespedes would be like, actually, I changed my mind. Because that's what happens to the Mets.
Right.
Someone sends a fax that doesn't get received.
Yeah, like they forgot the cover page, so it just got thrown in the trash.
Yeah, that's peak Wilpons right there. But I was reading some stuff about the new CBA, and there are some people fearful that it's going to be like World War III during the next negotiations, because revenue is continuing to grow. They expected it to be at like $15 billion by 2021 throughout the league. And there's just now more rules for teams to spend less money on players. So there's the fear that owners are just going to be pocketing all this. Luxury tax numbers are going up. However, the penalties are also increasing. So the more you spend, the more you're going to be penalized. And teams like the Dodgers, teams like the Yankees, teams like the Cubs are going to be less likely to exceed the luxury tax because of those strict penalties. There's a new qualifying offer system, which I swear you better be a brain surgery to understand, because I was reading that thing, and with all of the contingency draft picks, I could not even really make sense of it. The international player market, it will now have a cap, so no more signing guys to, like, Shohei Ohtani is going to be an issue when he comes over from Japan, because there's a $5 million cap annually on these guys.
No more Moncada signings.
No more what?
Moncada. There's signings like that are depending on how old
if
the
you're
player
under,
is.
If you're under 25 years old, exactly. Right. And then some more of the crazy wonky stuff. Thankfully, the All-Star Game no longer counts for the World Series. There's a 10-day DL. And some of my personal favorites is that each player is now guaranteed 2 seats on every spring training bus ride. And apparently there will be a hall monitor for chewing tobacco, unless you have already made your Major League debut.
You really went deep into this thing to know that... spring training bus thing. I didn't even know that was an issue.
Well, yeah,
it's ridiculous. The fact that it was negotiated and put it into here is such a it's such a ridiculous statement.
I find a lot of this crap fascinating because I mean, what it kind of gets down to is that unless you're in the major leagues, the life of these players is pretty shitty. With the fact that they have to get 2 seats.
The minor league salary. Well, it makes sense, because I can see for some of those games, you know, if you're going between like Tampa and Bradenton to play the Pirates, they're just like, load up 50 guys. Why not? We'll see who we can get in today. And they don't want to spend on an extra bus. I could see that being an issue. So I guess, you know, that's nice. I'm sure that probably wasn't even an issue for every team. Like the Yankees, I don't see that being an issue for. But I'm sure like the Marlins, it was just like, well, we've got Uber X. So... You could take that.
Exactly.
And then...
Yeah, and it's not a problem for anybody in Arizona either. They don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. That's just... Here, we've got a bicycle built for 25.
Yeah, just go.
I did see, though, the minor league salaries, the minor league minimums are up.
Yeah.
They're up in, like, the $80,000. Yeah. I remember... I graduated high school in 2003, And I played two summers for Team USA, and in talks around that, it was all around the like, well, if you go do this, you're only going to make like, you know, a few bucks. So
right, that's why they're all selling insurance in the off season.
Yeah, now you can live a decent life, especially where so many of these people are from, middle of the country. If you don't live in New York City, $80,000 is a really good salary, and then you make some extra money doing, you know, either a local promo or going and playing in a winter league.
So the 80,000 minimum, is that for AAA? Or where does that start?
You have to,
in single A are not making $80,000.
No, you have to reach a certain tenure.
Yeah. Oh, okay. See, I didn't see that.
There's still dudes riding around the farm in Iowa and not making any money. They're making $50,000 max. Maxed out. Like, that's the baller on the team.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's a number that they can now slap on to a contract, or not a contract, but slap as a headline and say, hey, look, you're going to make $80,000. We do care about our players. When in reality, I really don't think it applies to many people.
You get two bus seats when you go from Fort Lauderdale to Orlando. Congratulations.
When was the last time you rode on a bus? Like, having that extra seat is huge.
No, yeah. I'm not gonna disagree.
Especially
if buses suck in general.
Especially if you're the size of Aaron Judge.
Oh my God! Yeah,
it's more of a factor though, the seat in front of you than the seat next to you, in my opinion. The seat in front of you is the problem.
Well, I've read some books from minor leaguers, and the crap they used to pull on each other on these bus trips, just like openly farting in each other's face, pants down. Like, if you fell asleep, you would basically get like the trash dumped on you. So the fact that you have an extra seat, I don't really think is going to make that trip much better.
That's true. Well, I mean, it's just, you know, but you've signed up to be an animal too.
Yes.
You're getting transported. Yes. It's a cattle call.
Another thing that I thought was interesting is that it is written as a quote priority to have international play in the near future. So more games. Did they play a regular season game in Cuba last year? Or was that a spring training game when Jeter went down there?
That was spring training, I believe.
I think that was spring training because they did one in Australia too, right? They went to Australia.
I think they opened the season in Australia two years ago.
Oh, you're right. That's what it was. You're right. And they've done it in Japan too.
They've done Japan. Taiwan, I know maybe. They're going to do England. Yeah. They're going to go back to Mexico, Japan. It's just all expanding the game internationally, which makes sense. The problem is, well, I guess with so many baseball games that even if it's the Brewers and, you know, the Twins in London, it'll be cool. It'll draw people. It's going to be tough to get, you know, the Yankees to give up home games, you would think. But you never even know, because if they can get some games that would be like a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday series and it's $5 tickets at the stadium and they can get a guaranteed sellout somewhere else, they may make the trip.
I'd be interested to hear about we actually do have a bunch of people from the England, London area who listen to the show. So definitely shoot us an email or send us something on Twitter. But I'm considering like the football games and the NFL games. I have a buddy living out there, and from what he's telling me that everybody likes going to the games, they're a lot of fun, but nobody cares about the NFL in general. And the fact that this is made a priority from the players, you know, I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to extend their reach, marketing efforts and things like that. But I mean, is this something that depending on where you are, they're going to go for a good time, have fun at the game, and then just not care about you until you come back? I think so. And do they care what team or players? Probably not. I mean, I think it's going to be one of those like spectacle type things rather than actually getting people invested in the game.
Well, I think it's similar to like the NBA. So let's say you've got, you know, the Dodgers go somewhere, then it's an opportunity for, you know, Kershaw's agent to have, you know, to schedule an appearance through Nike or Under Armour or whoever. And, you know, a billion people come out and he makes an extra, you know, couple hundred grand. You know, we see Kobe and Steph Curry and all them make trips in the offseason. So, you know, it just kind of like that. While the interest at its highest, you can make some more money.
And I think like when the Yankees played in Japan that year, Matsui was on the team. And when Matsui went back and played in Japan, that was like the biggest thing in that country's history because they're insane about baseball over there. I don't really think the same effect is going to happen if the Yankees go play, Yankees and Red Sox go play in London. Does anyone have, is there any UK-born players on any major league teams? Do they even care about something like that? The nationality. Well,
that's exactly the thing. Yeah, because you're right. Because when you go to Japan, it's a national sport. They have guys who are playing in the major leagues. That's a totally different animal. But when you're going to like England or anywhere, you know, that doesn't really have baseball as their national sport. I mean, I like Australia. That one is interesting to me. Like to do a market study on Australia and how the game is affected. People actually start caring about teams in the major leagues after they come, or you know what kind of endorsements they're getting, or like JJ was saying, the marketing appearances. I'd be interested to hear that because I have a feeling they're few and far between. Because the NBA is a different sport than Major League Baseball as far as the personalities of the players.
Oh, yeah, the stars are much more marketable.
Except for in the movie Basketball, then it's actually the same sport.
I got to rewatch that thing.
No. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to see Yankees Red Sox in London.
Oh, I actually think we are.
Well, maybe London, because that's a quick flight. I think for a lot of these, maybe if it's a Red Sox home game, the Red Sox give up 35,000 people to go play somewhere where they get ticket sales for, you know, 70,000 people or whatever venue they decide to stick these games in. I think there's definitely opportunity there, but I think we're going to see a lot of games that would get 20,000 people in Minnesota, if that, played somewhere where, 50,000 people are going to come out because it's, only three games. And, they're only coming to our country once, then, next year they're somewhere else.
I agree with you that a team like Minnesota does have more of a desire to go, but I think this is going to be a mandate from baseball, and they're going to want to send the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Cubs, those types of teams to a town like London because they don't want to mess that up. They have one chance to have baseball enter that market. They're not going to mess around with the Twins versus the Tigers. They're going to send the biggest teams. And as far as the Yankees, you said the Red Sox aren't going to care because they only have 30,000 seat stadium. Well, I mean, I know you were at the stadium a bunch last year. If you looked around, the thing was half full. So they're also
not according to John Sterling, not according to Michael Kay.
They're also looking for tickets.
It was half full, but those tickets are sold.
Yeah, they're all sold. You're right, though, in the sense that Major League Baseball is not going to screw this up. They do have a shot. It's not like the NFL where they can send the Jaguars and the Titans to London and they'll sell out a game because it's the NFL. The NFL has 16 games. They're, the people are going to go. The fact is baseball is a totally different animal. And I think JJ's right. If they do go to London or wherever, they are going to send their biggest attraction because they need to make it a good experience. They need to make sure that it does make a mark on that country and the people that actually go. Because if it is a crappy game and there's not, high level players there, then they're not going to care for the next time. And that's obviously the goal. It's not a one-time thing. They're trying to get the reach for, the next 15, 20 years.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to some mailbag questions. This first one comes from Israel, and it's looking at the rotation moving forward. He says, my question to you is if Brian Cashman doesn't sign a big arm for the rotation this year and we lose Tanaka in the opt-out clause, what is going to be the Yankees rotation for the future if the kids don't work out? Scott, you want to go first?
Yeah, so Tanaka opts out, the kids all suck. Who do we go? Where do we go then?
Exactly.
I guess we go sign some people and try to fill some spots. I don't know. It's a pretty big if all around hopefully that's not the case. I think that Tanaka doesn't opt out. I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to stick in this contract.
What? Really?
Yeah, depending on how this year goes, but yeah, I think he's such a big draw on because of where he's from on the New York Yankees, that I think there's a lot more money tied to just the contract. Anyway, the fact that the kids don't work out, I mean, look, that's a very big possibility. It's a probability in all sense because usually they don't work out. So they'll just adjust accordingly.
I mean, I think Tanaka is definitely going to opt out. Assuming he's relatively healthy, which is what he was last year. I know he ended the season with a little bit of an issue, but unless he has like a major injury, he's definitely going to opt out. What do you think, JJ?
So this is a season where it would kind of be great for us if he had to miss a bunch of starts.
Because of that opt out?
Yeah, because then he won't opt out. But at the same time, if he opts out, I don't necessarily it all has to do with how healthy he is this year. But again, I don't see other teams throwing more money than we've already thrown at a guy who already has a documented, you know, I'm one pitch away. I mean, every pitcher is, but more than other pitchers, I'm one pitch away from, you know, being out for a year, if not longer. And also, I'm routinely going to have to have extra days off in between my starts. So, you know, there's just more to kind of cater to. But then also to, I think, you know, Scott's point, there's so much more for a Japanese player in New York or Los Angeles in terms of marketing opportunities, you know, being a face for their country and, you know, making more money off the field that I can see him staying and, you know, getting that kind of that legacy here in America. You think about, you know, Matsui went and played a few years, you know, other places, but, you know, you get to see at Old Timers Day the reaction to him when he comes back. That could be something that, you know, interests Tanaka. And luckily we have some Japanese players who, you know, can be in his ear and tell him, hey, this is what it's like. You know, this is what life is like after being a Yankee. I think that was a big thing that Robinson Cano missed out on when he made his decision to go to Seattle.
No, didn't you hear? He loves Seattle now. Now that he doesn't have that stomach issue, Seattle's the greatest place on earth.
That's why he's got to do his fundraisers back in New York at the 40-40 Club for his charity. Seattle's awesome.
Yeah, he's constantly back here for a lot of his things. Even marketing appearances, he still comes back. The fact you're absolutely right. You hit it spot on. And the fact is if Tanaka is on the team, on a Yankees team that does well and wins a World Series, or a young team that progresses through and does extremely well, I mean, those opportunities off the field as well are going to be twofold. I mean, there's going to be so much attention to him as one of the leaders of this new Yankees, all these new young guys, that the attention is going to be ridiculous. I think it's in his best interest to be on the Yankees in the next 3 to 4 years.
And I think that he still can. I think it'll be like a CC situation where he opts out and it's basically a threat to Cashman and the Yankees, and then they have to give him 1 year on the back end of the contract. They didn't. The Yankees re-signed CC, and it only added 1 year. I could see something like that happen with Tanaka just to get that little extra insurance. And, I mean, I guess the good thing with Tanaka is he's still relatively young. He's not going to be in his 30s when he opts out. But you're saying you don't know of a team that's going to offer him more than already guaranteed to him. And if he has a healthy year this year, they're going to forget about those elbow issues, or at least a GM will forget about it.
He's got to be perfectly healthy all year, though, which
is rare. It's not going to happen. But if he misses two starts, I wouldn't, you know, I think his agent could still sell that as he's healthy. If he misses 9 or 10 starts, that's obviously a different question.
I think if he misses, not even misses starts, but just because, you know, the team's not as in contention as we'd like to be, and, you know, they'll find reasons to then push him back a few days. But I could definitely see the Yankees then leaking to the media, or me just, you know, being a Yankee fan, putting it out there to try to help the team. Like, oh, maybe there's problems with his elbow.
Can we get that movement started? Are we getting that movement started?
As bloggers, this is what we have to do.
Well, I'm pretty sure I say that every week on the podcast, so I don't know how much the word is really getting out there, because Yankee fans still seem to think he's one of the best pitchers in baseball and he's an ace.
A 200 innings Cy Young contention.
199.2, not 200.
Big time ace.
All right, let's move on to the final mailbag question. Scott, I'm not sure if you're going to really be interested in this one, but it comes from at JTMac21 on Twitter. Justin, he writes for our site. He says, what Yankees player would be the best MTV The Challenge competitor? I know, JJ, you are a fan of that show. Scott, I do not think you've watched The Real World in 20 years.
Probably close to 20 years, yeah. Actually, no, my wife just turned it on, so I have seen a few episodes this year, actually.
I don't watch The Real World now, but here's how I got suckered in. I listened to Bill Simmons' podcast, you know, the BS Report, a few years ago, and he loves The Real World. And he said, if you are about 30 years old and you used to watch The Real World and think, oh, I could be on that, and you've never and you haven't watched it in like, you know, 5-6 years, watch it now. It's the same show. You're a different person. It's amazing. Because you're just watching it instead of being like, oh, I could do that. It's like, oh, God, I've douche chills. How are you people doing this? So, and I got roped in at Barstool to doing an MTV The Challenge podcast. So I watch these idiots on TV once a week and do a podcast for it. The best, who he's not on the Yankees yet, but it would probably be Clint Frazier because he's still young and he's a psychopath.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the, well, exactly isn't there a thinking.
Guy? Isn't there a guy that's on the challenge that looks exactly like him? It was a guy that was it was on when I saw it years ago. But he's a red-haired dude, freckles. He was a crazy dude who was on the challenge. He was on the challenge forever.
You might be thinking of Wes.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A spinning image. Oh, they're God, they're very similar.
I really hope Clint Frazier does not go down the path of Wes.
I really don't either.
I have no idea where that guy. What happened to this guy? Train wreck?
He's still on there. He's oh, wow. still on these shows.
Aren't there a lot it's of those prodigious. People still on the shows?
They're actually, the one that they just filmed that'll come out soon is like all these people who were probably on like the last time you watched are like now back. Guys who went and got like married and tried to have real lives, now they're divorced and they're back. It's like a murderer's row of champions coming back.
I remember
back.
Johnny Bananas. Oh. Is that guy still around?
He announced
Johnny
Bananas? His retirement.
No, he's still he's back.
Did he
Johnny Bananas won last season.
It was he's still on last season. He's got to be 35.
He's the winningest challenge winner of all time. He's the Ric Flair.
Is there a belt for that?
And so last season they had to do it was Rivals 3. So it was him and his rival who used to be his friend, but she voted him into a challenge like 3 seasons ago, whatever. So they're rivals. They go through, they dominate. It's the most dominating performance ever. They're winning every challenge. It gets to the final thing, and right before it starts, it said, you know, we're going to go, and all there's all these stages, and just whoever does more for their team at the end is going to get to decide if they want to split the money or keep it all themselves. And it was a curveball. And they went, they dominated, they won. And they went through all the teams, and like third place, like, yeah, of course we're going to split it. And everyone, you know, second place, oh, we're going to split it. And everyone like overcame their differences. And then Johnny Bananas, it was his decision. And he said, you know, we've overcome everything, and I couldn't be here without you. But I'm going to keep the money. And he was public enemy number one on the internet for like a week. We interviewed him. He was all over the place.
Yeah, Scott, you had to have seen a clip of this. It happened like a year ago, right, JJ? It was one of the best heel turns in reality TV history. And my favorite part was that he just went on a tour de France post-show of I Don't Give a Shit, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, no, I definitely did not see that. And I think the last time I saw that guy was when he was off of The Real World going on the show. And then he was on it. I remember him being on that show. I didn't watch it, but I just kind of knew. I don't know how I knew. It's like osmosis. You just know who's on that show. And he was there. And he was old. So he's got to be really old at this point. And I could see that. Why would you if you're that old? I mean, who gives a shit?
But it was like he got like $275,000, something like that. Yeah. It was more money than they've ever given out, and he got to keep it. And then he recruited a bunch of these other guys to come back. So, like, CT's coming back, and he's a Boston psycho.
Yeah, but
I remember him. He was a nut.
So, I thought he – maybe I was thinking of him. He retired, though, right?
Yeah, he retired when Diem died.
Right. As far as – I'll try and bring it back to the actual question. You said Frazier. It's a perfect answer. I was going to say Judge because of his size, but I think he's too nice of a guy, too quiet mannered to be on that show. Maybe past Yankee player Swisher, maybe he's got that that kind of energy that is required to be on MTV Challenge.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of energy, drinking, and just like being able to manipulate.
Yes, that's true. You almost need to be able to play the politics game more than compete.
And I think Clint Frazier's young enough that he'll still be willing to manipulate people when Aaron Judge just seems like he's really good at giving hugs.
All right, so that'll about do it for this episode. You can find JJ on Twitter at BarstoolJJ, and he's also got a podcast, Yuppie Junk. JJ, anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
No, follow me on Twitter and yeah, listen to my podcast. It's either me and my friends or my dad or whoever I feel like talking to, sometimes comedians, entertainment personalities, just shooting the shit for an hour. Comes out every Monday. Find it on all major podcast networks and its website, yuppiejunk.com.
Scott, any last words before we get out of here?
Nope. Hopefully we sign some more studs like Mr. Matt Holliday. Let's get older for a year.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.